This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Wednesday here on the Jeff Calkins Show. Today on the radio show, normally we would have John Martin on Wednesday. He is on vacation. No John Martin. We do have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. Grizzlies play the Lakers tonight. I guess it's a revenge game for the Lakers. Last one was a revenge game for the Grizzlies. We'll talk to him about that. And then Sam Hardam is going to join us. Talk about what is happening in the city. So we got a busy show. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock and Sam Hardiman after that. Obviously a lot to talk about today, including the Grizzlies, including the playoff rankings that were released last night, and including the lamentable news that 901 FC will be moving. GiveMeSport.com reported last night that because 901 FC does not have a soccer-only stadium, its own soccer-only stadium, and there were no plans for one going forward, 901 FC will be moving, evidently, to Santa Barbara. Will not be here next season. And obviously, that's a blow to those people who loved 901 FC. There's no question. It is a blow to those people who loved 901 FC. Jeffrey, I'll start. Did you ever go to a match?
I have not.
Yeah, I went to the first match. And then I went, it's interesting. I look back at some of the history. And it was announced in 2018 that they were coming to incredible sort of applause, and that Tim Howard would be involved. That came later. Over the time, Tim Howard would unretire, but that he would be involved came right off the top. At this point, Memphis was an adopted home for Tim Howard, and so there was a grand celebration in 2018 that this soccer club would be coming in 2019. There was another massive celebration when it opened to great acclaim, great fun. Then there's the news that Tim Howard was going to, you know, unretire. That was great fun. They've had real success. Just last week, I think it was, Jeffrey, we had someone on from 90FC talking about their playoff match, which was a week ago, Saturday. Was it just?
I believe it was last Saturday.
Yeah. Which they lost, but they've certainly acquitted themselves well. There's no question they have put a quality product on the pitch. And there are those people who love it. And to see on social media...
Caleb Patterson-Sewell joined us.
People who have had a great connection to that club saying what it means to them, it's sad. It's too bad. It's lamentable. I saw Pete Pranica, who's done some of their games, talking about it, tweeting about it. And so it is unquestionably lamentable. Also, by the way, one notable moment in 901FC history. In 2020, the first public sporting event in the midst of the pandemic was a 901FC match that they staged very carefully. John McCullers, who was the doctor who we had on multiple times during the pandemic, to talk to us about how best to handle the pandemic. And he was, an advisor, really important, spearheading this community's response to the pandemic. He smashed the guitar at that game, at that match, before the match. That's one of the things they've done, is they've had people smash the guitar. And it was interesting because typically when a minor league team comes to town, the reactions can be all over the place, right? They can be eye-rolling, I don't care. They can be embraced. There can be some combination of the two. Like when the Memphis Showboats most recently announced they were coming to Memphis, I think there was a big response. The entire, actually, city council showed up to the press event announcing it. But I got the sense that in the community, there was more sort of eye rolling. Didn't you think, Jeffrey? The nostalgia, the connection to the Showboats name made it intriguing. Obviously, that Fred Smith was involved in bringing him here. But there's some combination typically of celebration and eye rolling when a minor league team comes to town, mostly because of this city's experience with so many minor league teams coming and going over the years. There are some minor league teams that... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I also don't think it helped that we had the AAF so recently. Like, I think had there not been the AAF, I think that would have been a little bit more like nostalgia play, but I think it was the fact that, and I get it, they're not the same leagues, and I do think it's clear to me the USF has a better like structure and organization, but I don't think it helped that we saw, you know, the Memphis Express just right before it.
Right. But I do think in this
I definitely think you're right. There's a natural skepticism to...
But there's a couple of minor league clubs that haven't met with much skepticism. One is minor league baseball. One is the Redbirds, because of the deep historic roots in this city, because of the tie to the Cardinals, because of the history of minor league baseball in America.
Sure.
You know, it's not some fly-by-night creation. And so the Redbirds have always been important. They're clearly suffering at the gate right now, honestly. But they've always been braced and critical. And you look at the celebration when they came, when they returned, when the Redbirds came, and then when AutoZone Park opened, that was nothing but, an outpouring of love and support. And honestly, I think the same is true, to a lesser degree, for this soccer club. It wasn't freighted down by a history of, you know, as you point out, an AAF team that had been here a year before that failed, right? Like,
right.
It was this new... Soccer seemed to have a new life in America. It was the sport that was on the rise. We have seen now successful professional soccer in this country. And so it was getting in on that wave. It was cool. It was downtown at a time when downtown... Listen, they named the club 901FC. So it was sort of at the height of the Memphis is cool grit grind era, right? That was partly forged by the Grizzlies, but there was a real good feeling about downtown. When they came, announced they'd be playing at AutoZone Park, no one said, oh, won't go downtown. Like, that wasn't the vibe then. They slapped the name 901FC on the club, and they specifically said that they would be playing in AutoZone Park and that they would bring people downtown to play in AutoZone Park.
Yep. More events at AutoZone Park. Like, to your point, like, the logo, like, the it's stylized as, like, a Beale Street sign, like, everything. Like, it was clearly a downtown operation.
It was to bring people downtown to further activate AutoZone Park. You had the booster club met at the brass door, and that's what the operation was going to look like. And, you know, it has had a mixed run. Like a lot of things, it started, like, it literally started right before the pandemic, right? And so the pandemic hits, that creates financial problems. Stadiums kind of start to fall apart a little bit, which we've seen complaints about the Redbirds and to the Redbirds about the condition of things over there as well. Happily, there's some projects in the works to improve AutoZone Park. But I think there were real high hopes about 901FC, contrary to some minor league teams that come to town.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fair to say it was the team that was most impacted by the pandemic because they were drawing 7,500 people. Like, it was something to do. It was a downtown thing. It was cool. The pandemic is I think it's the local team that was most impacted by the pandemic because it just killed all their momentum.
And yet they're leaving ultimately because they want a new stadium. And that is absolutely the right of the league. The league has said, we need soccer-only facilities. Otherwise, we're not going to stay in your city. And other clubs have been moved because those cities don't provide soccer-only stadiums, committed soccer-only stadiums. And so it's absolutely their right to do that. I have some mixed feelings about all of this because I absolutely understand and appreciate the passion that 901FC fans have for that club and what it has meant to them. Hell, during the pandemic, during that match, I did a column, and as part of the column, there was a guy who he and his wife were dealing with. His wife had a very severe cancer and couldn't come to the match simply because it was during a pandemic. Right. Who would risk that, right? Who would risk that during a pandemic? Friends arranged for them to have access to an apartment that overlooked AutoZone Park so the couple could, even as they dealt with this horrendous illness, so they could have a moment of, you know, happiness as they were watching a soccer match. Like, that's the kind of thing it meant. And I see on social media talking about what it meant for kids who played soccer and how engaged the club was in some of that. And so I'm not at all downplaying how hard it is for those folks they're leaving. And then I honestly, it's never a good thing when anything leaves. You know, when something up and leaves the city, it makes it a poorer city. And that's true if it's some restaurants or a soccer club or a business, it just makes it a poorer city. And then particularly at a time when we do, in fact, want people coming downtown and more people coming downtown. So I thought it was bad news last night, and it continues to be a blow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with
you. I'm going to get to the butt here.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'm also to the point that, I mean, I also would say this. They're leaving because the city won't buy them a soccer stadium, build them a soccer stadium. And you know what? I'm not sure that the city should build them a soccer stadium. Like, in the end, while I understand all the depth of sadness and while I share in some of it, I also do also understand that cities have priorities. And right now, the idea of building a soccer stadium, I can understand why in a city that does not have a hell of a lot of money, they don't find the money to build a soccer stadium. Isn't that understandable to you, Jeffrey? Look at how many people go on a given night. Like, you're going to spend millions of dollars for a soccer stadium?
Well, and then, like, even the plan, which you know, I've been very clear. I'm a renderings guy, and I tip my cap to 901FC. When everyone wouldn't release renderings, they were releasing renderings for the stadium. But you're looking and you're like, okay, well, the plans are right behind the Liberty Bowl. It's like, why do we need two stadiums right there? And I understand they wanted to also use it for concert venues and whatnot, but there's complications that come from that. Like, in the end, the price tag never made sense. And we still don't have a finalized plan for it. We know it's happening, but we still don't have a finalized plan for the FedEx Forum renovations.
Well, I mean, that's the other question. The other question would be, listen, you say you don't want to build a soccer stadium. And by the way, the 901FC plans that were released, it was an $80 million soccer stadium.
Yes. And by the way, that was that based on the renderings they released, like that was going to be way low.
So here's the truth. There are a lot of people who will tell you that a government shouldn't be pouring money into Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, a stadium that is used, you know, whatever. How many, you know, is total with between the Tigers and everything else? Is it used 20 times a year?
I think that would be the high.
Yeah, that is used to, you're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into a stadium that is used 20 times a year. What are we talking about? I mean, again, this isn't my argument. This is what people will, this is what the critics would say. It's a poor use of money, and the university should be, you know, let them fund their own soccer stadium, their own football stadium, right? Like, but as a community, we've decided it's the University of Memphis. It means a hell of a lot to this community. The idea that you might someday get into a better conference could have an impact on the whole broader community. And the University of Memphis is important to a lot of people. Memphis sports, University of Memphis sports, important to a lot of people. Even in this down year in attendance in Memphis football, there's more than 20,000 people there at every game. You know, so it's a meaningful, important part of the fabric of this city. We think it's something that we need to put public money towards. Here's the public money. And if you ask the University of Memphis, could you carve out $40 million of that we're giving you and put it to it and so we can build a soccer stadium? I think Memphis would say, we're having a hard time paying for this as it is. Like you look at what they're doing over there. They have one plan for the stadium. If they, you know, a plan A and a plan B. Plan A involves putting seats that slant down over the party deck. Basically, the party deck runs the length of the field pretty much, or from the 20 to the 20 on the home side. And there's a party deck. What they'd like to do is have a whole bunch of seats above the party deck. Steve Earhart at the Liberty Bowl will tell you he's counting on that to bring the capacity up. But right now, that's just plan A. They're definitely looking at plan B, which might be to not have those seats. It's not like there's any excess of money in the plans that they could peel off and use for a soccer stadium. And then honestly, with the Grizzlies, same thing. You can make the argument, plenty do. It's a waste of money. You shouldn't be putting public money towards a private enterprise, which is what the Grizzlies are. Most economists will tell you, not a good use of money. But I think we know that in Memphis, what the Grizzlies have meant to the city. I think we know in Memphis what the Grizzlies leaving would mean to the city. I think you look over and see what they're doing in Oklahoma City, where they're building an entire brand new stadium with public money. And you say, listen, a little more than $500 million to renovate FedEx Forum. That's in the world. It may not sound like this, but in the world of publicly funded sports arenas, major league sports arenas, that's cheap.
Well, I mean,
that's cheap.
I think Jacksonville's on the hook for $1 billion to redo the football stadium.
Yeah, and if you ask Jason Wexler, hey, could you peel off $40 million here so we can, you know, if you and the University of Memphis each kick in $40 million, we'll be able to build this. I think they would tell you they're barely making it with the $500 million. So, what do people want? They want you to find $80 million for a soccer stadium. Well, not to be honest, if you're just being honest about it, look at the attendance. Not many people go. And you know who owns the Redbirds? Redbirds are owned by a private equity group.
That's the bigger issue.
I mean, they're not the Redbirds. The Redbirds and the
901 FC. They're both owned by the private.
901 FC. They're owned by Diamond Sports Group, which is owned by Silver Lake Capital.
Yes.
And so it's a private equity. It's a private equity group wants you to build them an arena.
Correct.
And the city of Memphis said we don't have $80 million.
And by the way, they have not. I don't think they've put a dime into AutoZone Park. They do what private equity does. They cut jobs, and then they come and they just milk it till there's nothing left.
It is their absolute prerogative to leave.
Sure.
And by the way, I'll go back to, like, I found quotes from the original when they came here. And when they came here, the head of the league said as follows. It's a fantastic stadium, talking about AutoZone Park. A lot of baseball stadiums don't shape out well for soccer. But when you watch a game here, you won't feel like it's a soccer stadium jammed into a baseball stadium. Now, whether that's true or not, that is what they were saying at the time. So I think we've sort of seen this coming ever since they said they needed a new soccer stadium or they'll be gone. And it doesn't make it a happy day that they're gone. But am I going to criticize our public officials or the University of Memphis or the Grizzlies for not taking $80 million of the $350 million and putting it towards minor league soccer? I am not. And maybe that's short-sighted of me.
No,
I don't even think there was. I don't even know there's much prospect that it was going to grow into something. We have the major league team is right down the road in Nashville. Do we think that Memphis was going to get a franchise if they performed well? Like, was there some vast opportunity for massive growth? You would have grown the sport of soccer. Listen, if someone could build one and plop it in the fairgrounds and bring more people to the fairgrounds and then maybe more people to the event center and then more, I'd be happy to have it there. I just wouldn't. I understand why. Why there's an unwillingness to pay for it, to put it there. But if Silver Lake Capital wanted to build a soccer stadium there, I would applaud them for that. I would write a column and devote the show. I'd have someone from Silver Lake Capital on explaining to us how this is great for the city and it's win-win for everybody and all of that. But that's not happening. And by the way, I'd also applaud Robert Pera and the Grizzlies owners, if they wanted to fund everything privately. What happened here is that the city made a judgment that the Grizzlies are more important to the city and that the University of Memphis is more important to the city. And here's the truth. That judgment is correct.
Yeah, I don't even know. Is that judgment made by them? I thought that judgment was made by the state. I thought the money that was handed out was for the Grizzlies and for Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium.
I don't think so. I think it was for stadiums.
Okay.
I don't think it was. Yeah, I don't think they specified.
Then I totally agree with you. Like, at a certain point, I mean, remember when this first started, when the money first started happening, I was the first guy that raised a hand and was like, guys, there's going to have to be decisions made.
Yeah, you said there's not enough money here. And your objection to the, not the objection to the soccer stadium, did you think the price tag was too, like, $80 million. Because I remember when
if they were trying
to cover it,
right? If they were trying to build the stadium that they had released, I was like, that's. I just know how these things work. Like, that is a much more expensive stadium than that.
Yeah. So then you get to this question of ultimately, the truth of the matter is that, you know, might soccer come back someday? Sure. You never know. Everything has. You know, like, we had the Rogues once, right? Like, we had the Americans.
We've
and
not
the
had Those the are... CFL return. Come on, Jeff.
So everything does, and so maybe it'll return, and if so, maybe it'll be successful.
Like, I do think there is a legitimate question of, did they come here under false pretenses? Because, as you point out, the stadium was good enough for them when they came here. Like, did they know, hey, we're going to demand that soccer only facilities be built? Because that would have,
I think that happened along the way is that, my understanding.
But my point is that happened publicly along the way. Did we know privately? That's a legitimate question.
What if
they may have known that this was an ask they would ultimately make. And that's fine. Like, if they thought that was an ask they would ultimately make. But the way it was pitched, at
least, that's why I'm saying
the way that it was pitched, at least, was we love this downtown. What could be better than right here at Third and Union, having a soccer stadium, having people parade over from the from the brass door? It was fantastic. So anyway, I don't at all mean to diminish what the loss means to those people who loved that club, and how our city is poorer for the fact that they're gone.
No, I totally agree. I also agree with your point of when things close or things leave, it builds up a narrative, and context never applies to the narrative. Like, no one will ever sit there and say, like, well, not a 1FC loss. Well, yeah, the league demanded they build a soccer specific stadium. No one puts context. It just gets stacked up and used against you.
I don't think that on this one I've heard anyone say, there's another thing failing in Memphis. I think most people, the initial report itself made it clear this is why they're going. Now, if you worry about the Redbirds, which I do a little, I don't have any particular insight on the Redbirds. And right now, obviously, we have the Cardinals scheduled to come here and everything seems hunky-dory and they're making certain improvements to the ballpark. The Redbirds, to me, the challenge there more is attendance downtown. I mean, they obviously have a beautiful stadium. It may not be in quite the shape it was when it opened, but it's been an absolutely beautiful stadium, so they can't complain about that. If they were to leave, it's because minor league baseball in downtown Memphis was failing. Honestly, that would be that. And if the Grizzlies were to leave, it would be because Robert Parra decided to seek greener pastures somewhere else, because most pastures these days are greener than Memphis, at least in terms of the actual green. So I don't have a great fear about that now. I have some worries. I do. I have some worries about that, which I've never had before. I was the person telling you all along since they first came here that the idea of the Grizzlies moving, in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years was fanciful and scare tactics from those who didn't want them to come in the first place. Now that the lease is running out, they need a new lease. And until we have one, until we have a new lease, I won't be completely confident of the Grizzlies' future. And I think, honestly, that context helps shape why the soccer stadium isn't high priority. Jim Strickland included it in his plans for what the money should be spent on. But unless that money was accompanied by some magic beans that grew extra money, it was never going to work, as you pointed out when the news first broke. Anyway, all right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We will talk about the playoff standings, which were released last night. I have thoughts. I have thoughts on who's getting screwed, Jeffrey, and these are not typical thoughts for me. This is not an entity.
I look forward to this.
This is not an entity that I normally think is getting screwed. It's an entity that I normally think is doing the screwing. Anyway, we'll talk about that on the other side. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Sam Hardiman as well. In the meantime, I'll tell you that if you are wagering on the NFL, no better place to do it than FanDuel. It is America's number one sportsbook. Safe, secure, official partner of the NFL. And you can get started if you're new to FanDuel. Bet $5 and win, and you get $150 in bonus bets plunked right into your account. That's right. Bet $5 and win, and $150 in bonus bets. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issues now. Drawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Holidays are a great time to get engaged. Let's be honest, you've been thinking about it. Now's the moment. Christmas is a great time. Anytime during the holidays is a great time. You can, before Christmas, then you can celebrate with your sweetie at Christmas. What you got to do, though, is you got to get to Robert Irwin Jewelers. And I say that because they have been doing business in Memphis for more than four decades. Not some Johnny-come-lately. They're great at what they do. They sell stunning diamonds at better prices. And they do it in a way that's takes the one of the most high-pressure experiences of your life, buying experiences life, and make it low pressure and fun. And one of the ways they do that is because they have this meant-to-be guarantee, where if you buy your loose diamond or custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. Just kind of takes all the pressure off. But it gives you some sense of the confidence that they have that you are going to absolutely love your ring. If you can dream it, they can create it. What you got to do is go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. They got convenient locations all over the Memphis. I go to the one across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. Again, there's great financing options, 24 months deferred option, take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. All right, Jeffrey. So the bracket came out last night. The playoff rankings were released, and as you correctly predicted, Ole Miss would be in and Georgia would be out. Ole Miss at number 11, and Georgia is out. They're ranked 12, but they're bumped out because Boise, as one of the highest ranked champion, one of the top five ranked conference champions, gets that spot. And so Georgia is out. And I guess my fundamental view of this thing, Jeffrey, is that the SEC is getting totally screwed. And I normally think the SEC is the big, bad, evil monster that is screwing, that screwed up conference realignment. It screwed up money. It screwed up college football. It screwed up a lot. But I think they're getting screwed. How in the world can you say that four of the five best teams in America are from the Big Ten and that Georgia is not one of the best 12? Explain.
I think it's simply because Georgia's sitting here with two losses, and Georgia has found itself in the predicament of not only do they have two losses, their two losses are to two other teams with two losses, and so they're all getting lumped together, and the way that they've just decided to sort it out is they're bumping them below Alabama and Ole Miss. I've always thought this was weird. Alabama, I feel like, still gets kind of a benefit of the doubt, but I never really felt like Georgia was treated as kind of like the dominant, give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, I know their schedule wasn't great last year, but it's like they went from not losing a game in 2 years, they lose in the SEC championship game to Alabama, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, you're out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like Georgia gets the same, gets treated with like the same reverence that I think Alabama does.
I think that's probably true, and that's an interesting perspective that I had not occurred to me, but I agree with it. To me, you know, like look at Penn State.
Yep.
Penn State has literally beaten nobody. Penn State has played a ranked team and lost. They haven't played a single other team that is included in the rankings. They beat USC. Like, what is Penn State's best win?
And so I actually think it's Illinois.
Also not top 20.
Correct.
Do you, I mean, Georgia has beaten Texas and Clemson and then lost to Ole Miss and Alabama. Isn't that more impressive than not playing anybody?
I think what they would also say.
And losing to the one team you've played, one ranked team you've played.
I think the other thing, at least working in Penn State's favor, is while, yes, the only good team they've played, they've lost to, they've taken care of business in a better fashion. Like, Georgia, even in some wins, has not looked great.
Indiana has beaten nobody. Indiana has beaten nobody. Penn State has beaten nobody.
If you're an SEC, I mean, you're pointing out the same thing I did yesterday, because I was talking with Tim. Realistically, the SEC has, I'm going to say, six teams that are going to have somewhat of a case, and I'm not even including Missouri.
And Missouri has somewhat of a case, yes,
correct.
Absolutely.
So, like, I mean, in the end, Missouri is going to have at least something to say about it, but like, to me, it's like, what happens if this thing just goes fairly chalky, which is, let's say Georgia beats Tennessee this week, because we now got the word of why the point spread was double digits. And the point spread's double digits because Nico's in concussion protocol. Now, can he get on the Mahomes playoff concussion protocol plan where all of a sudden he's back in 6 days? We'll see.
They've got some good doctors over there,
yeah,
in Tennessee.
I mean, there's no question. I mean, you can always put safety first. But if Georgia wins that, and then let's just say that in 2 weeks, Texas A&M knocks off Texas at home on the last game of the year, all of a sudden you're sitting here with all these teams at 10-2, and how the heck are you going to parse through them? There's not that much, like, there's not a ton of, like, head-to-head overlap. And sometimes when you have the head-to-head overlap, it's like, well, they beat this team, but they lost to that team. And so I don't even know how they're going to parse through it.
It partly goes back to this, though. And again, I'm not an SEC defender, but counting losses is a stupid way to rank teams in this world where not only do you have wildly different schedules between conferences, you even have wildly different schedules within conferences. Honestly, the one SEC team that is getting the benefit of the doubt,
Texas,
is Texas. Texas hasn't beaten anybody. Texas' best win's what, Vandy? Texas played one tough team and lost.
Yes.
Well, what's Texas's best win?
It's Vanderbilt.
And so Texas is the one. Texas is sort of taking the Big Ten or the Big 12, whatever the path or the ACC path towards this, and saying, yeah, we won't play anybody, whatever. We just won't chalk up a bunch of losses, and therefore we will get ranked. Texas is the one that's getting the benefit of the doubt because they literally haven't beaten anybody.
No, I mean, Texas's strength of schedule right now. So if you go through the two loss SEC teams, Alabama's strength of schedule is 11th. Ole Miss's is 21st. I'm sorry, Texas A&M's is 21st. Ole Miss is 23rd. Tennessee's 35th. Texas is 56th.
Yeah. And there they are. They're the one that's getting the benefit of the doubt. Now, some of this, of course, will play out. But in the end, hey, and again, I can't believe I'm the one saying this. A two-loss SEC team is going to be left out. Could be Tennessee, right?
Could be Ole Miss.
Could be Ole Miss.
Could be both.
Well, right now, let's assume that Tennessee loses this weekend. Okay.
Right.
I'm not predicting it. I'm not wishing for it.
It's
I'm
a 10-point spread right now, so you're not insane. This isn't like some far-fetched idea.
And Ole Miss runs the table, right? And, you know, Georgia doesn't lose again, and Alabama doesn't lose again, and then either Texas or Texas A&M win.
All right.
Is Tennessee getting left out? And Indiana plays Ohio State close.
I need to know the scenario of who is in the SEC championship game at that point. I think in your scenario, the SEC championship becomes... Did you have Texas beating Texas A&M or Texas A&M winning?
I just said someone wins. I didn't tell you who.
Well, I think it would matter who's in the SEC championship game. Like, what happens if... What happens if... I think in one of those scenarios that you laid out, a likely outcome is Texas plays Alabama in the SEC championship game, and let's say Texas wins. Now, Alabama has taken a third loss, and...
I just don't believe... They have not said what they're going to do. I think you have to... Unless you get embarrassed in the SEC championship game... I think you have to heavily discount that third and not even count that.
Well, then, though, the problem, though, is are you still going to dismiss the Tennessee-Alabama head-to-head?
Well, yes. Yes, I would. I mean, whatever. It would be wherever I would have. I would leave them wherever I had them. Wherever I had them, if I'm dismissing it leading up to the SEC championship game and Alabama then lost, I would continue to leave them there. It was the old what people used to say about playing in an all-star in the Senior Bowl.
Yeah,
can't hurt you, can only help you. Well, that's a lie. It can't hurt you if you look bad in the Senior Bowl.
Oh,
it'll
yeah.
hurt you in the playoffs. But they always used to say, I think playing in the SEC championship game, unless you look
dreadful,
woeful,
like you get blown
or
out,
or suffer an injury that changes the reality.
Sure. Like if Milroe gets hurt in that game,
I think you should stay exactly where you are in the rankings. That should not be held against you.
I think also the conferences are going to push for that because those championship games are such money makers for them. They don't need to devalue. They're already in this question of, well, is it better to get the bye week or not play the championship game and then be the fifth seed? Like, they're already having to deal with that. So they're going to need to somehow prop up the game.
I think they have to come out and state that clearly, which they have not done. You know, I think they have to state, we are not going to hold it against teams. You know, that obviously there's still an incentive to win the conference championship game because you're going to get the bye, right? You're going to get the top four seeding, you're going to get the bye. So it's not like saying we're not going to punish you if you lose and don't get blown out. It's not like that would remove any of the incentive to win that game or to play hard in that game. There will still be an incentive to win that game. I think they should come out and say that.
I'm still wondering this question. Like, if we playing out your scenario of, if Georgia beats Tennessee this weekend, does that mean Georgia's going to jump right back in front of – does that mean they'll jump in front of Alabama and Ole Miss? Because, like, that will be the justification is, yes, they lost head-to-head to those teams, but this would be Georgia's third –
At that point, they would have beaten Texas, Clemson, and Tennessee.
Correct. And so that would be the justification, and I'm not even saying that that's wrong.
It's funny, though. Even that builds in this assumption that Texas is good.
Correct.
I think they're good, but they've beaten nobody, you know? And
well, like,
and
what would Georgia, what would Texas's record be if they had Georgia's schedule?
That's the thing. That is my larger point. It seems crazy unfair. And again, I'm not someone who's typically sticking up for the SEC or sticking up.
No, I mean, you want to talk about uncomfortable thoughts I had. I finally became the how many SEC teams would win the Big 12 guy yesterday. I had that thought.
Right.
And I'm not usually someone that does that. It's like, cause I accept conferences are different. But like realistically, when you look at the Big 12, like I think reasonably you can say Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, Ole Miss, Georgia, and I honestly even think Texas A&M, they'd all win the Big 12.
Back to Texas.
All right.
SMU drops in the rankings, right? They're down to 14, I think.
Yeah, their path is still, I think, the same path it's been.
It's fine. They don't have to feel screwed because they still have the path. I agree with that.
And I think it's been the same path basically for them.
I agree 100%. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
All they have to do, they've got to win the conference. If they do, they're in. If they don't, they won't be, whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
But in terms of the illogic of this, if you look at SMU's record and Texas's record, honestly, SMU has a better win. SMU beat Louisville.
Yes.
Right? SMU has a better win than Texas has. SMU lost a close game to BYU. Texas lost to Georgia. In a non-competitive game. Texas does not have any really dignified wins, unless you want to count Vandy. SMU has at least beaten Louisville. And yet Texas is, you know, where's Texas? Four? What's Texas?
I think so. In the rankings, they're three. In the seeding, they're two.
Right, exactly. And SMU has been dropped. That seems silly. But honestly, SMU, again, this will settle. This will all come out in the wash. But SMU and Miami, who is like, they've each beaten Louisville, and SMU did it more convincingly. That's the best win for each of those teams. And Miami has a worse loss. It lost to Georgia Tech. SMU lost to BYU. Why is Miami ranked higher than SMU?
Miami's offense, like offensive numbers, are eye-popping.
Yeah, it's just funny. It's just funny what
they're giving Miami credit for the Florida win.
Right, I guess. Anything else strike you in particular from the last night's bracket? The games are interesting. Here you go. So you got Notre Dame and Tennessee.
Sign me up.
A lot of fun. That'd be a hell of a lot of fun, right? That'd be a hell of a lot of fun. And then the winner playing Oregon.
Sign me up.
I don't think anyone thinks Boise, Ohio State would be particularly interesting, but you get to watch Ashton Jeanty, right? And then they go on to play Miami in the next round, whatever.
That would still be a great game.
Cam Ward in that game.
Yeah.
You know, Ole Miss plays Penn State. I'd like to see that. Wouldn't you like to see that? Ole Miss traveling to Penn State, Happy Valley.
Hopefully they could get a whiteout. I feel like we've spent a lot of time talking about should have had whiteout games.
Right.
I mean, if that bracket were presented to Ole Miss, they should sign up
for it
today.
Sign up in a minute, because then they got BYU next.
Correct.
And then Alabama going to Bloomington to play Indiana. That would be a hell of a lot of fun. And the winner playing Texas. I mean, I do think this is clearly a better system. You got 12 teams in as opposed to four. So sure, we're still arguing about stuff. Some people used to say arguing is good. When you have two teams in a championship game and we get to argue, that's good. I never thought that was good when it meant that a team that could very well win the championship and might be better than the two teams that were picked is not included. Here, I don't really think, I suppose it's possible. Let's say Tennessee gets left out or Ole Miss gets left out or Alabama gets left. I mean, Alabama's not going to get left out, or Georgia gets left out. You actually would have a world there where a team that you could see maybe winning the championship would be left out, right?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think if you're one of these SEC bubble teams, I think it's very clear what you're rooting for. you are the biggest Kansas Jayhawk fans ever this week. You need BYU to take one of those losses, and you need them to get popped down. I think it's very clear to me that you need to root for...
And you need them, why? Do you think there's any chance that the Big 12 is going to get a BYU, a one, let's say BYU loses the championship game, a one-loss BYU team would knock an SEC team out?
Yeah, I don't think you need BYU to get to that championship game undefeated and lose, and then, you know, like a close loss. Because
you think they would bump, you think that would then bump out Colorado, let's just say, would get in.
Correct.
And then BYU would bump out an SEC team and you'd be down to three?
Yeah. Oh, I'm saying that that's a scenario in play. I still think this is going to be somewhat, like, part of the reason why I'm not getting upset is I do think in the end Ty is going to go to the SEC, but they could have a situation where numbers are working against them. And then I think it's very clear, you need Ohio State next week to absolutely lay a hammer on Indiana.
You do wonder if Ohio State, cognizant of that, will, if they're up meaningfully, would go easy on Indiana.
Well, I mean, the other flip side of it is the very next week, they've got their exorcism game where
you know
playing Michigan, if they can add an extra touchdown, they are going to.
Yeah, there they would, yeah. All right, we had other news in college football. Brent Venables gets a vote of confidence.
Yes.
See that?
Yeah.
Now, there are some votes of confidence that are, like, I thought when Ed Scott said, Ryan Silverfield is my guy, right? We have the right guy leading the program. I've got a phenomenal relationship with Ryan Silverfield. I thought that was a statement of fact. I didn't think it was a vote of confidence for a coach who's on shaky ground that actually is not a vote of confidence at all, but is a vote signaling the trouble that they're in, right? There are two kinds of votes of confidence. What is this Brent Venables one?
Well, the other thing about the Ed Scott vote of confidence is somewhat it's out of his hands. I mean, if Ryan goes and wins Friday, at the minimum, he's getting the one-year extension, and if he wins in New Orleans, he gets a two-year extension. So having a vote of confidence is, you know what I mean, kind of neither here nor there. I took that as I took it more similarly to the Scott Strickland vote of confidence where, hey, we understand people are unhappy, but we're letting you know that, like, this, we're going to retool the staff, but he's going to be back. So don't even let the story start.
All right, if you're selling your house, call Josh Issa and his team at Keller Williams Realty. That is my simple advice. 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. If you're selling your house, kind of a tricky market. Rates have started to come down, then it went up again. You know, it's a little, I see houses sitting out there all the time because I'm looking to downsize a little bit occasionally. And so I look at houses, and every time I look at the house, the same house is still there, and it's still there, and it's still there, and it's still there, and it's still there. So you need someone who can market your house aggressively and hopefully get you multiple offers. That's what Josh Issa did for Trudy, who heard us talking about Josh and his team. And within 24 hours, she had multiple offers. Josh offers flexible fees, no upfront costs. He'll let you out of your contract at any time. It is Josh Issa. Phone number 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. When we return, Chris Harrington joins us. Grizzlies Lakers tonight. We'll talk about that. Then Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. It's the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.